Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. I am your host, Bill Sickens. Welcome to this week's show. Bill, Gretchen, welcome.
Hello.
Hello there.
We are in the middle of the 2025 season of giving, and User Friendly is proud to support the William Temple House in Portland. This is a great charity. They've been around for 60 years. They provide mental health services to those that can't afford it at either low or no cost, depending on the situation, and also provide a full food bank, which this year has been in demand. I wouldn't say it hasn't been in demand, but more this year. They're doing a fall fundraising campaign. Check it out if you want to see what they offer, or if you can make a donation, go to williamtemple.org or userfriendly.show. Either one will take you to the right place to get some more information. All right, Bill, Gretchen, how was your week?
All right.
Yeah, I did some crazy shopping.
Well, that's good, and enjoy it, because, you know, with the onset of AI and everything else that's going on, there's been a lot of different things talked about, but according to Elon Musk, we're not going to have to work at all in 20 years. Now, I don't know what that means exactly, but, you know, that prediction's
out
there.
We'll all be dead?
Yeah, that's one possibility, right? We're going to be talking this week about a lot of different things, including AI, where that's headed, cybernetics, robotics, answering some of your questions you've been sending in that we haven't gotten to earlier in the year, and just kind of giving a quick once over. I don't know how quick, but more of a deep dive, I guess this will be in the second segment, to look at what, you know, we might need to fear and what we don't need to fear and all the rest of that. And the other big thing is AI going to steal your job. We're going to talk about that a little bit too. After the news in this segment, our guest is going to be on talking about his ebook. I will leave it to that, and we'll get to that a little bit later when we get closer to that part of the show. But before that, let's go ahead and jump in to the news. What do we have this week?
All right. Shopify suffers an outage at a bad time. So what is a bad time? I would think any time would be
a bad time. Yeah, any time's a bad time, I'll tell you. You know, and that's the question. But hey, what, you know, what's a bad time? When's a good time for your website not to work, right? So Shopify, for anybody that doesn't know this, runs a lot of businesses, mainly small businesses that have web presence, and they offer credit card processing, the ability to load catalogs and inventory. And most of the time, you probably don't know that you're on a Shopify site when you are. They're made or designed to be able to look like whatever company they are, and they handle the background. Well, they had an outage on Cyber Monday. That was the bad time.
Ouch.
Ow.
Yeah. And, this is something that affected a lot of businesses because Black Friday weekend, Cyber Monday, all of these, the reason they call it that is because, and have for years, is because with most businesses, especially retail, the day after Thanksgiving when the shopping starts is when they get into the black, which is the term for we are now in profit. So it's a very, very important time. And with all of that moving online as it has in recent years, if your website doesn't work during one of the main days, which Cyber Monday is a big part of that now, people will go and find the product somewhere else. If there's brand loyalty and stuff, they might want to come back. But this is just something that you don't want to have happen. We've had a lot of outages, as we've talked about over the last few months, from Amazon to Microsoft to others, this being another one for a different reason. As of right now, the explanations that's been given is just simply that they had a problem. Well, I could have told you that without reading their explanation. Get more details on it, we'll certainly talk about it. But this is something that on our Weird Technology, and we have several clients that do use Shopify, and this was a major problem, and there was no way to switch to a backup or anything else. So on the positive side for Shopify, I have not heard about this happening often. In fact, I think this is the first time I've ever heard about a real problem. There's been some quirks with it, but where it's actually gone down like that, but just that was not the day to have it happen. And
also, the term in the red meant that you were in debt.
Yeah, exactly.
You used to use red ink for when the money was leaving and black ink for when the money was coming in.
Exactly.
In the books.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's where again, that saying comes from.
Term in the black, because now you're in black ink. Red ink is bad. Black ink is good, right? So,
right.
Cambridge scientists successfully reverse human skin cells age.
So this is an interesting thing, and they're talking about a reprogramming process is what they're calling this. And this is one of those things that I'm going to preface with. I'd like to actually see this to completely believe it. Although looking at it, it looks like it is an authentic study. If it is, it's really kind of a cool thing because there, and this is the part of it that made me question it a little bit, is they're claiming to be able to reverse the age of your skin cells by about 30 years. Okay. That would put me at 20. That would be really nice.
Yeah.
So they're saying that the approach could be an important step towards future anti-aging therapies, though it is still early and much more testing needs to be done. So, you know, the thing of it is talking about it from a standpoint, assuming all of this is as the study has presented it, I do know we're moving in the direction of having some technologies at the forefront that will do things like this, that were not, you know, were science fiction not so long ago. So the idea that this is possible, yeah, it's possible. Are they up to a point where they can reverse your aging by 30 years? In my opinion, probably not. But even if it's somewhere in the middle of that, or even 10 years, that's still a big accomplishment.
Well, think of it this way. If humans are living longer, that means our skin needs to last longer.
Yeah.
Think about it that way. And if you were able to do something to help the skin regenerate, that could be just useful.
Right, right. And, you know, and again, all the way around, it could be useful, right? I mean, yeah, if you can reverse your aging, they're not claiming they reverse your aging, but your skin's aging by something like that. Whatever the reason, it'd be nice to do. So, yeah. You know, so we'll see what happens with that. They do say, like I say, it's in early testing stages and all of that. And I'm sure if this becomes a thing where it really works and is available, we're going to be hearing a lot more about it.
All the movie stars will use it. Okay, Japanese helmet with built-in AR visor is created. Tell us.
So this is a model called a GT Air 3 helmets and developed by the French company Eyelights. So basically what it is it is a motorcycle helmet, as you said, and in the visor, you have a projector, and that projector sends up information like your speed, your music that's playing, or if you're talking on the phone, that kind of a thing. I would imagine mapping and all that kind of stuff would be a part of this too. Now, what's interesting about it is this type of technology is something that would be very beneficial. I'm just a little surprised that they're just announcing it now because we've had HUD displays for a while. And even, yeah. You know, 15 years ago, I know it didn't market well, but with the beginning of all of this, which would arguably be Google Glass, had this type of a technology. And the fact that it's now being perfected and available on a consumer level, that's great, but we're seeing this type of thing already in glasses and other things that you can just get up and look at and wear and buy. So I think it's a good idea. I think it's great for people that ride bikes and that type of a thing. It makes things even safer, so you're not having to fumble around, you know, just like in a car. But when you do that on a motorcycle, it's even more dangerous. And having that available, cool. I'm just surprised that it's at this point that it's just coming out.
Teen's innovative system eliminates 96% of microplastics from drinking water.
Yeah, and this is absolutely cool. I was looking into this too, trying, you know, because we try to confirm stories we get. And I will say that a good portion of what comes in is, you know, you don't cover it because it's like this, it might be something more for the onion, but this one is not. And this is something that is really kind of cool. I am working on getting this, the inventor of this, the teen, on the air next year sometime to talk about this a little bit more because of what it is. He did a TED talk and some other things, and I'll get into the names and details here in a minute. But basically what we're talking about here is microplastics are in everything, and that causes a lot of problems because they're toxic. So when you have something that's made out of plastic, even biodegradable plastic, if it's not recycled properly, it will break down and eventually break down to a point where you don't see it anymore, but it is definitely still there. So what ends up happening is this has gotten into the water, into the air, into our bodies, into our animals' bodies, all of these different type of thing. And something that is very hard, if not impossible at this point, to get away from. So what they're coming up with here is a system that is able to basically filter the microplastics out of drinking water. So this is something that would work in conjunction with things like your water treatment plants and all of that. And then the other part of it that's really cool, and this has been an area that has been somewhat difficult to do, is that it actually can capture this stuff, and then they can get it out of the environment and recycle it. I mean, the plastic at that point could be reused. So something that if this can be actually automated and put into, you know, that type of a situation, I think that this could be something that is
a game changer.
A game changer. Major. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for, really. It absolutely is. So again, who did this and what I'm keeping for the moment, because I want to get our interview set up for next year, but we will put some information. I'll make sure it gets up onto our socials to be able to get to the TED Talk.
What to know about the 3i Atlas comet and why people keep talking about aliens?
Yes, so 3i Atlas, for anybody that doesn't know about this, is a comet, is what NASA's calling it, that came from outside of the solar system. It's the third interstellar object that we've observed ever, meaning that simply that it did not originate within our solar system. So, but the thing of it is there's stuff in space besides just what's here. I mean, you know, Earth is not flat and it's not the center of the universe. I'm sure I'm going to get some comments on that, but just believe me, it's not. So
just ignore them.
Yeah, exactly. So in a quick aside on that, there was a meme that came up with it. It says, well, this is embarrassing. It has our solar system with all the other planets and ours is flat. Well, that's embarrassing. Yeah, that would be. In any event, the comet has been exhibiting some unusual behaviors that researchers have not seen in other objects, interstellar or otherwise. One of them is that it seems to be able to correct its own course. There seems to be exhaust that changes color. It went around the sun, used it to launch itself back out. The tail of the comet, which normally goes away from on a normal comet, the ice is melting. So that's what creates the tail. And it's going in the opposite direction of where it's moving. Well, it had an anti-tail. It was going the other way. And from that, there's been a lot of speculation with the idea of, is this actually just a naturally occurring thing? Or is it something like, you know, an exotic example being an alien spaceship?
Now, or even a probe, like a Voyager.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or something of that nature. First of all, this wouldn't be impossible. But the thing of it is, as a major researcher at Harvard, we talked about this earlier in the year, has come up with the idea. He's not saying, well, this is a spaceship, but he's saying, look at the facts. From scientific theory and scientific method, there are some things here that require an open mind to be able to look at this and see if maybe there is something else going on that is something that we haven't seen before. Well, from that end, we're getting a lot of disinformation. I've noticed on the internet as well, as AI produced things that make it look like a spaceship, you know, being purported, well, this is the picture NASA took. No, it isn't. If that was the case, there wouldn't be speculation. But the thing of it is at the end of the day, it is also an odd size, which is also something that, again, is different from most comets. Is it impossible? No. But one of the other things that really has surprised people is the emissions of this thing include elements like arsenic that up until now we've only found in refined, you know, modern technology where these things are made. So again, it's certainly possible this is all naturally occurring. It's just something very unusual. And on the other end of the spectrum, it's certainly possible that this is something that is completely new and, you know, game changing would be the case. Now, people talk about this kind of stuff. Stephen Hawking said that meeting aliens could be very negative for humanity. And that's one of the things that drives all this, you know, a lot of this kind of speculation and stuff in respect to the idea of what happened when the Europeans got to North America, as a for example. As we all know, that went very badly for the Native Americans. And there are a lot of stories like this in our history. Now, if we're going to talk about aliens and look at this from a scientific approach, I personally would think that, number one, if this was possible, they'd already be here, probably. We might not know it. But number two, I don't see where extraterrestrials that have the ability to create spaceships, have this type of technology, would want to take over this planet. If I was one of them and figured out what's going on, I think I'd set my ship in the opposite direction and go as fast as I could.
These people are crazy.
You know, if you look at it. But the thing of it is there probably isn't that much difference either. You know, Roswell, when all that happened, hey, maybe it was one of their kids got a hold of a saucer ship and took it on a joyride and crashed it into the desert. We don't know.
But uh-oh.
Yeah, you know, that would be that'd be a big uh-oh. But
Dad, but again, I crashed the spaceship.
You know, can you imagine, it's bad enough. Dad, I crashed your brand new BMW. I think this would even be worse. So, in fact, I'm quite sure it would. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, very likely, I mean, you know, you've looked at the numbers and everything, there's very likely, I would almost say, you can't say with certainty, but 99%, that there are other species that live in this universe and other intelligences and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, again, people are worried. Well, the other side of it is having this technology and things, they might show up and try to help us. In fact, I think that would be much more likely, because if they were going to invade, we'd be invaded, you know, in all reality.
Yeah.
And so there might be a very positive direction that something like that could go too. Now, is 3i Atlas an alien spaceship? Well, look at the evidence and decide for yourself what you think. Generally speaking, the reality that those in these mindsets believe is that it is just an unusual comet. But there are other people that are credible scientists that seem to be suggesting otherwise. And I'll tell you this, if it is, turns out to be aliens, I don't know, would it be ancient aliens? I mean, history is going to have to do something with that, History Channel, right? So I guess it's been traveling.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, well, that's our news. Let's go ahead and cut over to our interview and find out about ebooks and some things dealing with that. Here we go. Joining us now, Luke Sanders, author, podcaster, and many other things. Welcome to User Friendly.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So instead of me trying to sit here and describe all the things you do, I'm just going to throw it to you. Luke, tell us a little bit about yourself and your podcast and your upcoming ebook. I know those were some of the things on the agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Luke Sanders. An Indianapolis native. If you don't know too much about Indianapolis, Babyface is from here. People like that. Got my start here. Worked on web series and I got placed on Amazon. Then I went into radio and transitioned into podcasting. With podcasting, I've been able to be a 9-time top ranked Apple Podcast host. And with radio, I earned 2 certificates. Thank you. And then now I'm entering in being an author. So I have my first book, my debut book, Luke's Dreamland, Superhero in a Movie. So I'm super excited about that, because that story is not based off my life, but it's inspired by my life. Like, some things are different about the character, but he's a 6-year-old boy, has a big imagination, a lucid dreamer, and yeah, the possibilities are endless with him.
All right, so let's dive into that a little bit more. Talk about the book, and you know when you're going to be releasing it yet? And tell us a little bit about, don't give us any spoilers, but a little bit about the story.
No, so the book came out on Tuesday, so it's been out for a couple of days now. But really about the book, so not giving too much away. We know it's about a dream, it's about a superhero. But the synopsis is he goes to sleep after watching his favorite movie about a superhero, and he wakes up and he's that superhero in that dream. And he learns very quickly that it's not all about fun and games. You have to kind of get together very quickly.
That is so true with superheroes, I think. You know,
oh, yeah. There's that always that journey of discovering, oops, it's not as easy as it looks.
So how do people find your book? Do you have a website or go to Amazon? Yes. What's the best way?
Absolutely. So you can follow me on Luke P. Sanders on social media platforms. And you also can search it on Apple Books. And you also can buy it online on Barnes & Nobles and other places as well. Other places online.
All right. Sounds good. We'll include that in our social media. So that the link is out there, but
so I'm curious. Right, so let's talk. Yes. I have a question. Yes. Why just an ebook and not a printed version, or maybe just not?
Question. I am self-published, so this is just a start. It's a short story. Target audience is 1 to 5-year-olds, but it's getting started. First time book, first time author.
Oh, terrific! Congratulations.
Now, I want to ask about some other things in your bio here. You say you're a filmmaker and have worked in that too. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that. That sounds interesting.
So I have a web series called Luke's Life Chronicles, which basically chronicled my life through college. And I'm bringing it back for a 2-part special. So it's really about the 3rd season, but it's put together in 2 parts with a 21-minute format for each episode. And it's not the same show that people have seen before. It's much more fun. It has all the love and editing that it deserved the first go around. And yeah, it's a great time. So it's about me going back to college. It's also about real life and catastrophes happening when you're trying to tape a podcast and go back to school days later. It's real life. It's fun life. It's everything.
And so, you know, writing a book and doing the web series and everything else you do, it sounds, you know, there's okay, these good things. What goes into something like this? What is it taking you to actually get to the point where your book's ready to go out and actually get your series ready to where it was to go out? I mean, I know there's a lot going on, but if you could talk about that a little bit, it'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. The book, so I came up with the title and the idea 2 years ago. I was looking when would be a good time to release it. And this was a good time for me to release it. But yeah, I really held it back to make sure the manuscript was what I wanted to be. I designed the cover. So I really wanted to work hard on that. And then with the web series, I'm kind of a one man show when it comes to like the editing and the story of it all. And because it's a docu web series, it's not a reality show, but it's a docu web series. So people don't know, it's like a documentary, but a series format. But yeah, it takes a lot of blood, sweat and tears, time, patience, going back to the drawing board when, you know, you just different stuff happens. So it takes time.
Yeah.
The reason I think it is absolutely amazing when you see content creators such as yourself being able to actually do this, as you say, a one man show. And the bigger productions, you have all these people around that do all these different things. But when you do it yourself, you're wearing a lot of hats.
Yes.
And have to really know a lot of different things to, you know, to pull it off properly. So that's great.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
Really just getting the word out about this book. I'm really excited about it. I made him kind of like I said, inspired by me. Like his hair is blonde. My hair is not blonde, but it's kinky. So it's just different things that I put into him. I made him interracial so he can appeal to kids who are of color and who are not of color. So yeah, just really excited about him, even though he's me and I'm him. Like Luke is both the same person, but yeah.
Oh, that sounds amazing. LukePSanders.com. Oh, go ahead, Gretchen.
So I was going to ask you, so do you see your target audience, is it mostly children, or do you think that adults could read it and enjoy it just as well? So like if you're, you know, a mom and you're reading it to your kid, would the mom enjoy it too?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I can say that humbly. I know I wrote it, but I do think adults would enjoy it as well because it's a simple story, but it's a fun story. It's something that you would really get immersed in the story and just seeing all of what he does and the people that he saves and how the story ends and will it be a part two with the cliffhanger, because there is a cliffhanger at the end. So yeah.
Put all the way around. LukePSanders.com is where you go, and we'll include that in our social media. Luke, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with this.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
All right, next segment, we are going to be talking about cybernetics, bionics, artificial intelligence, and answering some of your questions and looking at the actual state that this is in, where it's probably headed, and giving some of our opinion. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Check out our show at userfriendly.show. That's your one stop for everything user-friendly. Back episodes, submitting your questions and comments, looking at our blog, which we promised to start writing again this year and did twice and stopped. So we're going to have that be a New Year's resolution. How's that, Gretchen?
Oh, goody. Yeah. I've been busy. I've been really busy. I have these things called novels that I've been fretting over.
Hey, speaking of which, before we get into our topic today, how's it going? Night School Journal is out, almost out?
It is almost out, yes. And after, you know, monkeying around with formatting and all kinds of technicalities, we're getting like super duper close.
Yep. So it's going to be there. We're actually going to cover this in a little more detail next week because it will be out by then. You know, so we're going to get you the details on it and how to find it. It's turned out to be an amazing book, too. So I think you're going to probably really enjoy it. Anyway, that being said, let's dive into the topic that we're going, robotics, cybernetics, AI. And so, I mean, your book actually goes into that a little bit too, so that's appropriate.
Sort of.
So let's talk about some things that 10 years ago were completely science fiction and today are an absolute reality. And one thing I can say on that front, with all honesty, is I am a cyborg, and I will explain that a little bit later on. This is called your tease that you need to listen to this segment. So let's start with AI. Okay. We've talked about this a lot this year, as any technology show has, because it is proving itself to be somewhat groundbreaking, a little bit more than I thought it would be a year ago. And there's both sides of the argument on this, which we'll get into here in just a second, on how this is used. Now, Bill, I know you're concerned and have talked about it, upstaging and replacing artists. And why don't you comment on that for a minute, just because this is a big thing people are asking questions about.
Well, when it first started out, it was easy to determine if it was an AI picture or not. And now that it's been a year since, you know, those softwares have been out, the AIs have now begun to get better and better at it. And it becomes harder and harder to determine if it's been AI generated or not. And it has taken away a lot of jobs that previously for artists.
Yeah, and we're going to dive into the jobs thing in a minute here, because that is one area that is directly affecting artists, graphic designers, that whole area of expertise. Now, Gretchen, you're an artist. I mean, you write novels and are an artist and these type of things. And I know we were just talking about Night School Journal. You've used AI not to write the book, but for some of the editing process. And this, I think, would be a positive thing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Actually, it's really been helpful as far as the editing process. But you have to be mindful that when you use one of these AIs to help you edit, that you don't just accept everything that it suggests. Because I have seen a couple instances where it made a suggestion that would change the meaning of the sentence. You don't want to do that. So this is a tool that you work closely with. Like, all right, when I went to college, they did not train me how to write for like a novel. It was only expository. Okay. And so I didn't learn the proper punctuation for conversations in a textbook. Okay. I didn't learn that. And so I'm starting to learn the punctuation from the software, because it keeps correcting me. I keep making the same mistake. And so I'm learning while it's telling me, hey, you need to do that. But it's something you work with it. And you have to be careful, because a lot of it seems like the AI that I'm using is business oriented. Its mindset is focused on helping business people write factual documents. So when I'm using it, I'm doing fictional characters. I have children. I have adults who are maybe less educated. I have to be careful that I don't let this suggest the wrong things for the characters. So you have to use your brain. So right. It's a companion. It's a helper, but it does not replace the writer. Okay. It doesn't come up with the ideas. I do.
Right. Now, the thing of it is it conceivably it could. And I think that's where Bill's coming from. You actually replace the writer, you know.
Right.
I tend to look at AI as it's like the backup camera. Most newer cars have a backup camera. You shift into reverse and the camera turns on. The original goal of that was you would look in the mirrors and then have an additional thing to look at. A lot of people just look at the backup camera. It's not meant to replace what you would normally do. And I think that analogy kind of connects here, because you look at something like art, now not the monetization of it, graphic artists and that type of a thing, but true artists was about sitting down and creating something from nothing. It's a skill that not a lot of people have, and those that do have it are unique, and it really is something cool to look at. I've often said before, I can't draw a straight line, but I love art and I know what I like, right? So from that type of a standpoint, you're going to still have artists creating art. But Bill, like you said, it's getting to a point where you can't tell what's made by a human and what's made by machine anymore. And even a year ago you could. Now there's still some stuff in there right now today. I think if you really take a look at it, you can pick it out, but at the rate it's going another year, that might not even be here either. So now you look at industry and things like graphic design or commissioned artists or anything else that is a money-making venture of being an artist. Is that going to affect those jobs? Well, yes, it certainly will, and it certainly already has. Now, I know from my own standpoint that some of the stuff that we work in for clients and that type of a thing, a lot of the area is that I would experience is things like logos and other assets like that, things like Jeremy would have produced back when, you know, he was around and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I know from my own standpoint, I have yet to go to an AI and say, hey, this is what I want. Make me a logo. It does, but it looks something. It's just not the creative component that would exist from this is what I want it to be is not there. So what ends up happening, you're wanting to build logos for a lot of different stuff and don't care about that. And yeah, now you've just displaced jobs from the graphic designers that would normally have been doing it. But there's another part of this where, and it's the way that I've been able to get it to come up with concepts I like that I wouldn't have been able to create on my own. And then we have been handing those off to an actual graphic designer that then takes it and makes the real logo and that kind of a stuff. So again, this is something that has a lot of moving parts because it's changing so much. So today, as we stand, will not be where we're at a year or even a month from now. And it's a good idea in these professions to keep an eye on that. And I think that this is one area where it would be nice if government caught up a little bit, not said, well, you can't use AI for artwork, but definitely said that you have to declare, you know, where this stuff originated. I noticed, Gretchen, in publishing your book and stuff and working with Amazon, there's a checkbox now that, you know, is this AI generated? You have to, you know, so some right. of the bigger companies are already doing this. And it's nothing against AI. I think it's an amazing tool. I think it is something that I have found has really helped me with programming and other things. But there are hallucinations and that kind of stuff. And you can't take everything as you say, just here it is. A lot of people do. And like the looking in your mirror and nothing else analogy, you see articles and stuff that are written by AI that have not been vetted. You can tell
oh,
most
yeah.
of the time. Yeah. You know, so at the end of the day, it is going to replace a lot of outside
the commercial
of the audience,
artists.
Yeah.
A lot of the
yeah.
commercial people.
We're going to see that change. And I think we're going to see a change just like when we went from using movable type and blue line and all of that kind of stuff to having computers, there was a huge change in the yeah. industry at that point too.
You used to have typesetters and people who would create these layouts and things. And then all of a sudden the computer did it.
Right.
And so
right.
that was a big change.
So now some of the other areas too, just in doing some research to talk about this that I found is it is actually adding in many ways where it is giving additional artistic endeavors that wouldn't have existed before. Things like you list your house on the market and AI creates the rooms so that you can see what it look like with furniture in it, that type of thing. Now, this is not something a graphic artist would have done. It's not something that would have been a thing before AI was here to do that. So that's not replacing a job. That's just adding on to what it can do. So I think to be perfectly honest, are we going to see job loss? Have we already in artistic graphic arts, things like architecture? Yeah, we are. And so it's very least it's going to change it. There will still be commissioned artists. There will still be people that create art for art's sake. But all through history, it's been known that it's very rare that an artist is rich.
Yeah.
It tends to be, you know, after their lifetime, things become good and that kind of stuff. And the last 40 or 50 years, artists have been able to monetize their work. And I think that one thing that will happen with this is we're going to have what I call a SAG moment. What I'm talking about there is two years ago now when the Screen Actors Guild went on strike because they were trying to use AI to replace actors in movies, and today could. There needs to be some rules that we live by to make sure that we aren't eliminating artists, because that's not a thing that you want, because art is important. Real art is very important. And that's something that can't go away. And if it does, that would really diminish society, in my opinion.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
So that being said, I think definitely what we've been talking about here is that it is a tool. It is a very useful tool when used in the right way. But you go to college and try to use AI to write all of your papers, even if you get away with it, you're not accomplishing anything because, yeah, you got maybe get the degree, but you're not going to know what it is that you have a degree in. Not really.
Yeah, you're not going to understand and be able to produce when you're out in the real world.
Yeah. Now, some of the dangerous parts of this, we're talking about jobs and all that kind of stuff. Some of the more dangerous parts is the bad guys, hackers, and so on are using AI for those tools. And one of the things is with all these scams, we've talked about it many times. You get an email that you're, you know, had a charge to your credit card and it's going to post. And if it, you didn't really make the charge, oh, you better call us. And there's a phone number. Now, even a year ago, you looked at this and you could see some things that were out of whack. It, you know, the logo might be wrong or in the wrong place, words misspelled, that kind of thing, just didn't look right. Today, with using AI, it can look pretty much perfect. You don't notice it anymore. So from those type of standpoints, you have to take a different approach that if you need to call about your credit card, you'd never, ever use anything that's in a message that you've received, whether it's text or email or whatever, website. Go to your card, call the bank with the number that's on the back of the actual card or a bank statement or something, and check into it that way, because the number you call is going to put you in touch with the bad guys that sent you the email. It's not going to do you much good. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to do you very bad, you know? And it's interesting to me too, because the banks aren't completely getting this. And this is a true story. About 6 months ago, I was online ordering some stuff for an Arcade 1-Up cabinet and get the Facebook. And there's this thing that we're have, you know, some accessories on sale. It was 11 o'clock at night. I was going through, I did not check it. This was my fault. But I went on and go, okay, this is a good thing. I'm going to go ahead and order it. Well, it turned out to be a fraudulent site. Facebook Marketplace does not vet their advertisements very well. And, you know, fortunately, it was only like $90. So I realized that the next morning, okay, when I looked at the credit card, and there's a pending charge from something that was in Chinese letters, which not our Arcade 1-Up. Yeah. So, and this is what really got me. I call American Express to let them know there's been a false charge, you know, right away. Well, we can't do anything about it until the charge actually posts, but you need to call them back and see if they'll remove the charge. You want me to call the scammers? And that's what I was told to do.
Oh my goodness. You
know, so, so there's a lot to be learned, both business and personal things on this kind of stuff and things that we're going to have to deal with as this continues down the road. Now, the other side of this is robotics and cybernetics. Okay. So, definition of a cyborg is you have at least one mechanical implant that senses something on your body and manipulates your body based on what it's sensing. Okay. That's essentially a definition. So by strict definition, a pacemaker would make you a cyborg.
Yep.
In my case, I have an Inspire implant. That's what I was talking about and some other things, but the Inspire implant senses when I'm having a moment of sleep apnea and stimulates muscles to eliminate that. Don't need the CPAP machine. It's been quite nice, but that is cybernetics. Now, where this is going on down the road is we're seeing a lot of the technologies we have in medical that are essentially being upgraded. Bionic knees, bionic hands. Okay. So arm and leg extremity replacements, something that's been around for a while now, but they are mechanical. And they're getting to a point now where the machine can interface with your brain and be able to react and interact in the exact same way that your natural leg or arm or whatever would have been able to do. We're seeing this in things like heart replacement, other stuff of that nature. And this is something where this can go really build a quality of life, different type of things. Now, of course, when you go there, you can add sensors and different things that wouldn't normally exist in the original bio, you know, material. And one of the things that I think is interesting is a concept called smart prosthetics, network controlled, adaptive, and future ready. They connect to the 5G network on device, cloud computing, and machine-based neural learning helps to improve control and adaptability. On one side of it, that's great. But on the other side, what could possibly go wrong when somebody hacks your leg?
Yeah. Oh, no, I've got restless leg syndrome seriously.
I think cyberpunk kind of describes that because, you know, you can hack somebody's cybernetics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it certainly would be possible. You know, true cybernetics, you're going to have a control unit of some kind built in. Shadowrun calls that a cyber deck. And there's other names for it, but it's kind of your central control system that interfaces between your biological and your machine parts. And yeah, you would want to protect that at all costs that somebody can't get in and hack you. And this possibly is already a thing and it's getting there. So then the next thing that comes up from that kind of stuff is this argument that's coming out that would have been something you would have seen in a movie not so long ago, is what is a prosthetic and what is an upgrade? So right now, today, I could go have my wrist replaced. There's a site online that does that. My wrists are fine, but I could still go have them replaced with something that would have more power and, you know, that kind of thing to it. And you can get them even wear their skin to look like Iron Man or whatever you would want it to be. Now, is that elective surgery? Are you upgrading your body? Is it a prosthetic? You know, what are you actually doing? I don't like using the cyberpunk analogy with these type of things, but using it the wrong way, you could go down a very dark road with that.
Uh-huh.
And the technology is here. You know, basically now it's either being developed or it's already here. So it's a situation of, like any technology, it's not about the technology itself. It's about what you do with it. Talking about something from the last century, nuclear energy, this type of a thing. From one standpoint, it's a bomb, can blow things up, destroy life on Earth. From another one, it can produce clean energy until your reactor melts down because you built it wrong or something, but it can produce clean energy. And do some things from that kind of a standpoint. So there's, you know, uses from it. The technology itself is benign. It's what you do with it. And I think that's a lot of the same thing with implants and all of these type of things. Now, you know, I've been asked in the past, well, what do you think about it? I'm all for it. I'd be not cyberpunk, but I'd be the person that would go in and, you know, change what I can change and all of that and not have a problem with it. As long as, number one, I have complete control over it. I can turn it off. I know where it was manufactured. And my goodness, if it's online, I have, you know, complete control over that that system as well.
You'd want the items to be constructed by rational people who aren't trying to make a quick buck. People who care about whether you're going to have an allergic reaction, whether it functions well with the rest of the body. These are all really important, complicated factors to think about. I kind of deal with some of this in my Cyberhawk books.
Yeah.
I have to think about what kind of problems, good and bad, can occur.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I think it would be other cyborgs that would maintain it, because you'd also have to have someone that knows what it is to have that kind of equipment, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously people you can trust. I mean, this is all stuff that we are going to have to address and deal with. And one other thing that is a thing that you could do right now is something called biohacking. And this is using implanted technology, very basic implanted technology in some ways, to do certain things like start your Tesla, you know, or things of that nature. I think with some of the cybernetics that are coming out, you'll be able to be the key to your car if you want, you know, stuff like that. Some of this is already possible. Some of it is going to be here very, very soon. As the technology to do it actually already exists. It may just not be in a way that you can get to it just yet. So, you know, you look into this and you have to start talking about the ethics, the moral construct for different people, because different people are going to think of these in different ways, what it can do, what it can't do, and all of that. And that's talking about cybernetics, where you still have a human involved in some capacity. Now, the next one is robotics. There's a number of different companies that are really doing well at producing robotics. I mean, you know, you Spot the Dog, if you've ever seen that on line.
Is it Boston Dynamics?
Yeah, the Boston Dynamics, yeah. And it's literally a dog-shaped creature that can run around, and they're going and kicking it over and all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, that's not a nice thing to do. And, you know, but
no, it's not. Then it gets back up. All, yeah.
So. But these things are a robot. They have a program that's running them. They're operating off of that. And that's basically the end of it. But what you're seeing is a direction where we're going to be essentially combining cybernetics, bionics, robotics, and AI, and going to end up with something very different, you know, when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from that kind of a standpoint, you know, question is, we reach out, where is this going to end? Well, you know, Iron Man. Gretchen, as you do too, are learning to fly an actual real jetpack that does work, you know, and is usable.
Yep.
Technology was before 2017, when Richard Browning actually started working on this, was completely with an asterisk, science fiction. In the 1950s, they did have a jetpack for a little while that they were working on. Had a few problems. It could only stay in the air for 30 seconds, for one thing, and was not very user-friendly in the sense of being able to steer and all the rest of it. Gravity's packs, and I can say from personal experience, are. You know, it is something that I'm not there yet. Hopefully someday I'll learn it to this point, but those that can fly these things will. It looks just completely effortless.
Yeah, it does look effortless. It's impressive to watch some of those videos. And it makes you wonder, oh, is this real? Just like with some of the robots that I've seen, I wonder, is that, I know the Boston Dynamic ones are real, but then I see some of these other ones from Asia and I go, are those real or are they messing with us? You know?
And that's really what it comes down to, because you're talking about something where, again, is what you're seeing propaganda or is it something that's real? And enough of this stuff exists now that is real that you can't just write it off anymore. Then the second part of it is okay, you know, what's going on with it? What happens when the AI has to make the decisions instead of the human? Well, we're seeing this in what they're calling self-driving cars. I don't think we're completely there yet, but we will be someday. But when the car has to make the decision, okay, I'm going to get into an accident and I don't have a choice here. Do I hit the human in the crosswalk or do I hit the guy in the wheelchair on the sidewalk? This kind of thing has already started coming up. And so you have a machine that's going to have to make a decision like that. And that could be a problem, you know? And why I say that is because that's one standpoint where that's something that would be accidental and that you wouldn't want to have happen. All right, let's take another step. We all know that drones are being used in warfare now. And AI is starting to be used to run the drones. And what they're doing is the human, or in some cases with implants, cyborg, I'm going to just use that word because it's what it is controlling a group, a unit of whatever you want to call it, of robots, whether that's AI or ground pounders or whatever. And then the AI actually controls the individual unit. So it's like the commander controls the AI, but the AI makes the on-the-ground decisions. Like something you've seen out of a movie, right?
Exactly. So,
I don't know. I was having a conversation with this with a think tank a while back. And I said, well, you know, in my case right now, I've got to decide I'm already a cyborg. Okay. By definition. So if this keeps going, do I want to be a T-800 or a T-1000? If you haven't seen Terminator, see it, you know, and then we got into a big argument. Is the Terminator actually a cyborg because or is it an android, you know, because it's, the 800 is the one with the, you know, melting skin and all of that. I'm not sure there are biological components.
Yeah, that's a good question. So, or you could end up like General Grievous.
There is that too. I, you know, Star Trek or Star Wars, well, Star Trek before they blew up the Enterprise in every movie recently, or Star Wars. Star Trek is idealistic. Star Wars is more probably what the reality would be.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion. All right, so we're almost to the end here, but this is a good conversation. And again, touching on a lot of the questions that have come in, and please continue sending them in. We'd love to do a Q&A on this. I'm going to try to also get a guest on that makes some of the biohacking products to talk about that a little bit and what it is and where you can go with that and just see where it is. It's going to be interesting to see where we are when we're closing the year next year to see how much this has changed. And if it's the three of us really here, or if you're just going to be listening to three AIs. Until then, this is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0, copyright 2013 to 2025 by User-Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.